another edition of Sportslet 101 this week. And Bruce, what a very interesting read this was, even for a Yankee fan like yourself, I'm sure. You enjoyed Eric Sherman's new book, Two Sides of Glory, the 1986 Red Sox in their own words.
Yeah, and it was really important for me. It was really enjoyable for me because I obviously remember that World Series well. And I had a number of friends who were probably as crushed as they ever were as Red Sox fans, as the way that one turned out. And I root for the Yankees and I root for the American League. I mean, that's the way I've been, except in 1967, because I idolized Bob Gibson. But so that's who I rooted for, and I've never been a Red Sox hater. I don't hate other teams as a rule, but I was always intrigued by all the things that happened in that and didn't happen. Why did Oil Can Boyd not start instead of Bruce Hurst? That I always wondered about that. Why was Buckner left in? Did Buckner ask to be left in? Or was it a situation where McNamara said, no, I want you. You got to be there. What were all these? And you could hear scribes and radio people, everybody else talk it over. Now you can hear the players that were in the dugout tell you what they remember happened. And I thought what was interesting is you mentioned earlier, Schiraldi didn't really want to talk about this. Bruce Hurst didn't really want to talk about this. But Sherman was able to get them to talk. And when they did, they talked at length. And what I was struck by was the real cohesiveness among these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a team, and they are proud of being that team. And you can get on them for anything you want, whether it was Bob Stanley or Buckner or anybody or Schiraldi, anything that might have gone wrong. They stuck up for one another, and unless I'm a fool, it seemed like real genuine affection.
Yeah, and you look at the guys that Eric was able to talk with, Bill Buckner before he passed away, Roger Clemens, Jim Rice, Wade Boggs, Oil Can Boyd, Rich Gedman, Spike Owen, Tom Seaver before he passed away, Bob Stanley, Dwight Evans, Marty Barrett, Steve Lyons, Bruce Hurst, and Calvin Schiraldi. I mean, they were the major players on that 86 team. And you mentioned the team and the way they got along. And so many of them, in their conversations with Eric Sherman, talked about the tag that was hung on them of 25 players, 25 cabs. And they all, to a man, said nothing could be further from the truth about this team.
Yeah, and that was real eye-opening, because if that had been Sherman's opinion after talking to him, that wouldn't have meant anything to me.
Right.
But the fact that they all talked about how that really wasn't true, and they talked about how they socialized, and they talked about how their, you know, different families were friends, and there are other things. I mean, I can remember the media portraying Oil Can as not being very smart at different times. According to these guys, there weren't many people any smarter than Oil Can, and they talked about his deep understanding of the way things were, and his talking about his family had been playing professional baseball since the 1880s, and people ought to pay attention to that. A lot of these guys came to life in ways that I mean, with Oil Can, we saw him up at Mahaney Diamond.
Right.
You saw him acting with the kids and stuff.
So I saw him when he asked to borrow my car one night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. You told me that story. I mean, he seemed to be that sort of larger than life, fun guy. But when you get into the deep side of him here, it was interesting because he didn't hold anything back. I mean, he told it the way he wanted to tell it. I mean,
his thoughts on Jackie Robinson were very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember we talked about, I remember which book we were reading about how a lot of African-American ballplayers said, oh, great, that are going to take the cream off this league and it's going to be the end of us, right? Mm-hmm. And how that they didn't do that. What they did was they took the acceptable cream. They didn't take all the cream. And that was such an interesting thing. And I've been thinking about that a lot when I was thinking about this. Jackie Robinson is not as good a ball player. If you ask people that never saw him play, you don't know his stats, because he was one of the greatest of all time. No, he was a courageous man at a time when that's really saying something.
And he was a great athlete at baseball, probably not his best sport.
He was a very good athlete. You look at his numbers in the time he was in the major leagues, he was a really good ball player. But, you know, as Boyd and some others have pointed out, there were a lot of other guys who were that good, and they never got to come up. And he doesn't say it so much bitterly as he says it to make sure the story doesn't get lost.
Right.
And I thought that was really good. And And I thought Buckner, reading that, a guy who, obviously was forgiven by the real baseball fans.
Although, as he points out, and others do too, that very word, forgiven.
Yeah.
Forgiven for what?
Yeah.
And he talked about, and I thought it was one of the most poignant parts of the book, he talks about seeing a sign when he returned to Fenway that said, "We forgive you."
Yeah, forgiven for what?
Right.
I mean, and the thing is, people who were Red Sox fans and watched the team all year should have a better understanding of that guy trying to wheel around the bases in those high-top baseball shoes with the bad ankles, barely able to move. If he didn't play for them, they don't win the pennant.
No, and every player that Eric talked to said, "We're not even in the World Series without Bill Buckner."
Yeah, and so it's always amazing to me the way people want to make goats. I mean, look at Bob Stanley did everything that the Boston Red Sox ever asked him to do as a pitcher.
168 innings out of the bullpen
out of
one
the
year.
Bullpen, yeah. I mean, when I saw that, I thought, can this be right? I went to an old baseball encyclopedia and looked it up because I couldn't believe that was the case. 186 innings out of the bullpen. I mean, there were times, a couple of times where he pitched, I think it was back-to-back games with three innings of work each.
Mm.
He was not a knuckleballer.
You could
see that a Wakefield could maybe pitch 300 innings out of the bullpen, a guy that doesn't put strain on his arm. And I also liked the way I thought Peter Gammons said something about this, and I don't know whether it was here or it was somewhere else, about how Red Sox teams tend to get put into little boxes, lost in time. 67 is one team, 75 is another, 86 is another. There are links between them.
Right.
That linked them together. And you look at a player like Dwight Evans, who I would still argue belongs in the Hall of Fame, because if defense counts for anything, he was as good a right fielder as I've seen in my lifetime, and I've seen a lot of people play right field. But you look at the way his character, all that he went through with his family, with his kids that were always ill, and the like, he never is anything but steady Dewey.
Right.
He's the guy. Yeah. And to see all these guys, the first thing they'll say, Dewey, what an amazing person. Before they talk about his timely hitting, they talk about his power, they talk about his fielding, they talk about his throwing, and that was another thing. That guy had not only a gun, but he had an accurate arm. They talk about what a great guy he was. And, baseball is the best sport to write about. And we've talked about this before. It's the sport that is most made for that. But it's also, I think, the one that's made for the easy character assassinations. And I really like the way that these guys just wouldn't let that happen to any of them.
Right, right. They supported each other. And you mentioned Evans, and both Dewey Evans and Bob Stanley had to deal with profoundly serious illnesses with their children. Dwight Evans lost a child, Bob Stanley's child, and this great story about a child that Stanley got to know working through the Jimmy Fund, who had the same illness that his son would later get. And how, Bob Stanley says, we lost a World Series. My son survived cancer. That's all that matters.
And then he finds out that the kid lived for a long, the other kid lived for a very long time. He had sort of lost what happened to him.
Yeah. And then Richie Gedman, who I got to know a little bit working his baseball camp. In the late 80s, toward the end of his Red Sox career, who says, he's changed by that 86 because he was the local guy. He was the Worcester kid who wanted nothing more than to win a World Series for the hometown team and still feels the pain from that what some of the other guys have maybe moved on from.
Yeah, and I the other thing I liked was that was a discussion with all of them, I mean, it's easy for Boggs. He wins the World Series with the Yankees. Mm-hmm. He's got a ring. It's easy for Clemens. He wins the World Series with the Yankees. Guys that never got a chance again, especially because what so many people forget is getting there, that ALCS.
Right.
The Angels are sure they've won it.
Yep.
They are convinced they've won it. They're celebrating in the dugout.
They're high-fiving Gene Mock, who's finally going to get that monkey off his back. From 1964 in the Phillies.
When the Phillies were up by 9 with 10 days to go or whatever it was, 10 games by 9 days or whatever it was. Yeah, and then and you know, and it's Reggie Jackson, and it's all these guys that are on that the Red Sox have been their nemesis at times. Then they get the back to Boston, they win, they go to New York, and what I always thought was one of the best comments ever was a friend of mine said, yeah, they go to New York, then win the first two, the Mets had us right where they wanted us, right? You know, in weird weather, and I mean, everything that could have been odd about that World Series.
And the notion that the Mets were all fired up when Calvin Schiraldi came in the game, the guy they didn't want to face was Bob Stanley, who ended up throwing that pitch that was either a wild pitch or a pass ball. And I love the fact that Stanley says, I threw a wild pitch. Gedman says it was a pass ball.
Yeah.
Neither wants the other to take the blame
and
for that.
And nobody will claim that the other screwed up the sign either.
Right.
Which is what, you know, they know what happened. But covering each other's back like that, that was great.
Well, and little things that you don't know, like the fact that Marty Barrett had a pickoff play on.
Yeah.
At second base. So he's shifted closer to the bag, which means Buckner's got to come further off the bag and feel that Mookie Wilson bouncer that maybe if they're playing straight defensively, Barrett gets to instead.
And if Barrett gets to it, he gets even if he doesn't have a play, he prevents the run from scoring.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It really is.
And that's not the last inning of the game. That's what everybody else
forgets. They had a 3-0 lead in game 7 and let it slip away. Little things, too, that are fascinating, and Gedman's got the best perspective on it, that their three leading pitchers could not have been more different as personalities with, you know, oil can Boyd, eccentric, brilliant.
Like to party.
At times erratic, you know, never pitched a game without weed.
Yeah.
You find out in the book, Clemens, who comes across as a much more sympathetic guy.
Absolutely.
Because he's clearly a different guy in the dugout and the clubhouse and around players than the public persona. Yeah. And then Bruce Hurst, very deeply devoted to his Mormon faith and couldn't be more different, and yet all gelled. And in many ways, Rich Gedman, the glue that held those three together.
Yeah, and the fact that they all admired one another.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, oil can would almost have a right to be angry about a lot of stuff that he has let go by. But, you know, I mean, he could say, yeah, Hurst, you know, they only pitched him because, but he doesn't. He doesn't, and the lack of excuse making and stuff. But what I think, you know, when we talked about this off air before, if Sherman has done one thing above all else, it's good. He lets the rest of the people, he lets the players tell the story. Mm. And I thought, you know, there are the guys who he didn't interview. Some of them, you know, we have to make our own decisions about Stapleton and some other guys.
Yeah,
they're like. But what I found so interesting was a lot of questions about it were answered for me.
Yeah, and the fact that after winning all these championships in the 21st century, that fans now look differently at this 1986 team. Well, as they should. I had forgotten, too, that the city of Boston, even after that loss, held a big parade and celebration for this team, which is clearly one of the best teams in Red Sox history. So, you know, history changes through the years in the way you view teams, but it's certainly one of the greatest teams and one of the most enjoyable teams to watch in Red Sox history as well. And I had forgotten, too, and I mentioned this to you the other day when you were in, I had forgotten that Eric had written the book with Art Shamsky,
right,
about the 69 Mets after the miracle and the reunion that they put together out at Tom Seaver's place in California. And clearly his conversation in this book with Seaver happened during that reunion.
Right. And it was when I read that it was the light bulb went on. I said, wait a minute, that Rich talked about that with Art Shamsky. What was Eric Sherman doing there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that he had worked on that other book. I was really pretty amazed. What I think is great about this, when you look and see the people that really liked this book,
yeah,
Shaughnessy, who's already written two books on it himself, and it's like, you know, this is the best one. And Peter Gammons, people that know, you know, you can a lot of times you can get people to blurb a book, and reading a book now that was blurred by someone who I have tremendous admiration for, and I know it had to be a favor. But the way that I read other people's accounts of how much they liked this, people that were close to it, other players and journalists and stuff, it seems like he did a hell of a job.
He sure did. And I guess, so, you know, of all of them, when we mentioned Calvin Schiraldi, I guess I was so happy that Schiraldi is at peace. He's become a hugely successful high school coach. Yep. He's a man of great faith. And I'm glad of that, because I didn't want to think that 35 years later, he's still working through that and dealing with it, because he was so good. He's another one. He took over the closer role. Without his work down the stretch, they don't get to the World Series.
Yeah, and you know, he had come over from the Mets.
Yep, knew him well.
So they knew him well, and that's why we'll talk to Eric Sherman in 2 weeks. On the 28th, we'll be talking to him. I'm really, really looking forward to getting from him some of the shall we say more some of the nuances of these conversations, because they're pretty good ones.
And so important that he got these conversations with Seaver and Buckner. This was the last major interview Bill Buckner did before he passed away from Lewy body dementia, which is the same illness that led to Robin Williams' suicide.
Yes, and this is the thing I was looking for. This each was driven by different things. Getty says Bruce felt he had a responsibility to hold the standards of being a Mormon. Oil Cam was fighting for the rights of the black man in Massachusetts, driven by the pains of his childhood. And Roger, a kid from Texas, came to Boston with a me against the world, I got something to prove kind of mentality. All three wonderful people in their own way. Yeah. I love that line. All three wonderful people in their own way.
It's a great, ultimately a great book about teamwork and lasting friendship for most of these guys through the years. Two Sides of Glory, the 1986 Boston Red Sox in their own words, written by Eric Sherman, the foreword by Joe Castiglione. Check it out, and Eric will be with us in a couple of weeks to talk about it. Next week on Sports Lit, former Maine Black Bear basketball coach Bob Walsh will be with us.
Yeah, and talking in his book Entitled to Nothing, which I noticed some real parallels, looking back at the book again, between Bob Walsh and Red Gendron in terms of how you build something from the bottom up.
That's interesting, because Bob and I were texting back and forth last Friday when he heard the news of Red's passing. Yeah, so that makes even more sense.
There's something we'll talk. I really want to talk with him about that. I think both of them really understood.